VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we do thank you for joining us here on VCY America Network. And ladies and gentlemen, if you are a regular listener to this program, you will be aware of what's happening in many classrooms across this country. I mean, from the very earliest days of children entering kindergarten and all through their years, there's this push going on the part of many to introduce young children to question their biological sex, to actually deny science and teach that boys can be girls and girls can be boys. It's issues like this that are fanning the flames of gender dysphoria and really a boom in the number of young people who are claiming to be transgender. We've spoken before on the threat from the Biden administration to withhold school lunch funding from schools that do not allow biological boys who are gender confused from participating on girls' sports teams and vice versa. I mean, this also impacts the use of restrooms and locker rooms and showers, overnight field trips and more. Well, now, on top of this, the Biden administration's Department of Health and Human Services is attempting to alter Section 1557 and redefine sex discrimination so broadly that it is threatening the ability of doctors to practice medicine according to solid medical evidences as well as their own faith principles. Joining us to discuss this today, we welcome back to Crosstalk Dr. Jeffrey Barrows, the Senior Vice President of Bioethics and Public Policy for Christian Medical and Dental Associations. Dr. Barrows is an obstetrician gynecologist. He's an author and educator, a medical ethicist and speaker. He completed his medical degree at the Des Moines College of Osteopathic Medicine and Surgery in 1978 and his residency training in obstetrics and gynecology at Doctors Hospital in Columbus, Ohio. He's also very engaged in the fight against human trafficking. Dr. Barrows, welcome here to Crosstalk.
Well, good afternoon, Jim. Thanks for inviting me on.
I know you've been very involved in following this matter and studying what's going on of gender identity dysphoria. Before we talk into some specifics here on Section 1557, would you first of all explain gender identity dysphoria and why we're seeing such a literal explosion of this issue all throughout society today?
Well, that's a great question, and I would answer by saying that up until 2013, it used to be known as gender identity disorder, and it was seen by the mental health profession as a problem within the mental health of the individual experiencing the gender identity problem. And then in 2013, the American Psychiatric Association changed their coding and changed it from gender identity disorder to gender dysphoria. And dysphoria is a term that just means bad feelings. So it's a very general term that somebody is feeling negative about their biologic sex. And when they did that, it was critical to understand that they really took away the mental health component of that and almost legitimized the feelings of dysphoria in a way that has altered the approach to it ever since then. And that was the beginning here in the United States. And one of the things that then developed at around 2015, 2016 has since been described as rapid onset gender dysphoria. Because historically, gender dysphoria and gender identity disorder has been a problem within children, very few, far less than 1%, typically more common in biologic males, beginning at a very early age. But rapid onset gender dysphoria is something very different. It happens in the teenage years. It's more common in biologic females, and it's associated with peer groups. And so this is what we've seen with the advent of social media and Facebook groups and all of these, that there's been this rapid increase in groups, and that's caused these patients to then present at various gender clinics around the world.
It's amazing. And I'm really bothered as well, doctor, by children that are being targeted so early in life with this teaching? I mean, we're talking these preschool children's programs they watch on public broadcasting or children's books. And I can't figure this one out. Parents who are actually taking their children, like, to drag queen story hours. I mean, this just really baffles me.
Yeah, there are a lot of patients and parents that have bought into this. And I think it's important for your listeners to understand that the transgender ideology, their belief on this is that a child is born with a certain sense of what their gender is. And so they also believe that it doesn't have to align with their biologic sex. Then thirdly, they don't believe that parents are the best and experts at this. So that's why they are pushing the introduction of all of this into the educational curriculum as early as first, second, third grade. And it's also why they're making efforts to hide this from the parents.
Yes.
Because they really believe this is happening. It's the kids inherit from birth, and that parents aren't the best to deal with it, which is, of course, very different than what our biblical beliefs are.
Indeed, indeed. Dr. Jeffrey Barrow is with us here today on Crosstalk. Doctor, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services is right now in the process of altering Section 1557, and I'm going to have you explain exactly what this is, because we're talking about this section that's in the so-called Patient Protection Affordable Care Act, correct?
Correct. It was part of the ACA from its inception in 2011, and for many years it was really a nondescript part of Obamacare. And really what it did was it defined what constitutes discrimination. And initially it used the standard traditional definitions of discrimination on the basis of ethnicity, of origin, of sex, interpreting sex as biological sex.
Mm-hmm.
But it actually, the change began in 2016, in the last year of the Obama administration, because HHS under President Obama decided that they were going to change the definition of sex discrimination to include gender identity and pregnancy. Now, I want your listeners to understand very clearly that we at the Christian Medical Dental Association strongly believe that healthcare professionals should be seeing all patients regardless of their sexual orientation or whether or not they identify as transgender. We don't endorse discrimination and not seeing patients and providing routine care. But the other thing that the Obama administration did in 2016 was make it clear that instead of discrimination simply applying to seeing patients for routine care, discrimination was also going to begin including not providing certain treatments or procedures. And specifically, when it came to gender identity, if for instance, an OBGYN like myself refused to give estrogen to a biologic male that was identifying as a female, we could be then accused of being of undergoing sex discrimination.
Mm.
Or if I refused to give an abortion to a patient, I could be fined or whatever on the basis of sex discrimination. So we've been fighting that at the Christian Medical Dental Association ever since 2016. It probably won't surprise your listeners that when the Trump administration came in, they backed down these changes back to what the traditional definitions were for sex discrimination. But now that the Biden administration is in office, they are rechanging it back to what the Obama administration tried to do back in 2016.
That's amazing. I mean, so we're talking about redefining then sex to include gender identity, sexual orientation, and then this also, the changes that they're proposing also really targets people in your medical profession, healthcare professionals, to do what? You would have to provide or give prescriptions for that which is going to satisfy the disorder or the dysphoria?
Exactly. And engage in what is called and I use quotes with it, gender transition. We at CMDA do not believe it's possible to change a gender. It's biologic. But there are treatments that include, especially in children, puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, which is hormones given that are opposite than what would be normally given to someone of that biologic sex. So it would be testosterone for biologic girls and estrogen for biologic males to help them change their secondary sexual characteristics so that they appear more like the gender that they are identifying with. And yes, we would be forced to engage in that treatment, and if we refused, we would be charged with sex discrimination on the basis that gender identity it qualifies as part of the definition of sex discrimination.
And I know this is why you're speaking out, because this is really outrageous. I mean, here we are so quick to give these puberty blockers to children. I mean, that's what the Biden administration wants. But it seems to me that didn't the FDA recently warn that puberty blockers could have serious side effects?
Well, the FDA has been relatively silent on it. What we're seeing, though, around the world, when you look at very progressive countries like Sweden and Finland and even the United Kingdom that have been engaged in these therapies for several decades longer than we have in the United States, they've now seen the harm that can be done and the number of children that get into their 20s and 30s and then begin to regret that they went through this, and they are what's called detransitioning back to their biologic sex. And so, in fact, the UK has recently undertaken a very comprehensive review of all the good medical evidence regarding puberty blockers as well as cross-sex hormones, and they found that there's really no good evidence that puberty blockers make any difference with these children, especially in preventing suicide. There's a lot of potential harms. So the United Kingdom right now is changing its approach to these children, as well as both Sweden and Finland. And so they've been at it longer than we have. They're pulling back. But in the meantime, unfortunately, the Biden administration is going full force ahead.
I understand. I mean, they just shut down a clinic there. They called it a transgender clinic. I think it's the Tavistock Clinic.
That's correct. It's not shut down yet. It'll be shut down in the spring. But what they're going to do is change their approach from just one single clinic to a regional concept. They're going to open other clinics around the country. But when they do that, they're going to be emphasizing the mental health aspect of gender dysphoria in these children and require the children to undergo extensive mental health evaluations to rule out other comorbidities, they're called. Because we know a lot of these children really suffer from various other mental health problems and are on the autism spectrum, for instance, may have had trauma as a child. So that hasn't been dealt with properly by the Tavistock Clinic, and so they're going to be moving it out into a regional approach where the clinicians there will be emphasizing more the mental health aspect of the work.
We're going to take a quick break here, folks, and I saw a comment from one doctor from that clinic that is going to be closing down, saying that the clinic terribly mutilated or otherwise changed kids for life. Well, we're going to take a further look here at the Biden administration's plan to change Section 1557. Back in a minute here on Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, what kind of life lives in the deep ocean?
Chris, we're just now beginning to explore the deep ocean. Recently, a very exotic form of life was discovered around seafloor vents, where superheated water bubbles out from the interior of the earth into the cold oceans. There's no light down there, but submarines have discovered much life around these vents. Evolutionists are quick to point out that this must be the kind of life that was the original life billions of years ago, but not so fast. Recent research projects have shown that these pods of life around the seafloor vents are not old in any sense. They may be only a few thousand years old, not billions as required by evolution. And they certainly didn't spring to life from non-living chemicals. If it's living, God created it, and He did so back in Genesis.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Dr. Jeffrey Barrows with us here today, Senior Vice President of Bioethics and Public Policy for the Christian Medical and Dental Association. And friends, we're talking about a rule change that's been proposed by the Biden administration, Health and Human Services, to alter Section 1557 in Obamacare to bring about some significant change that we redefine sex to also include sexual orientation and gender identity. It also would require medical professionals, healthcare professionals, to perform or to assist in gender reassignment surgeries or give these puberty blocker drugs. But I understand, Dr. Barrows, that this would also require insurance plans to get involved and be forced to pay for this.
Yeah, that's one of the changes in this new proposed regulation, is that any type of insurance company that's on the Obamacare exchange or any medical entity that receives any federal funding whatsoever, if they receive $1 of federal funding, then these changes will apply to them. And so, of course, any hospital that takes Medicare or Medicaid, any clinic that takes Medicare or Medicaid, the vast majority, of course, across the country do, or any doctor that takes Medicare or Medicaid, these regulation changes will apply to them.
And that's the vast majority of doctors across this country.
I would have to say about 95%, if not more.
So the proposed changes here to the Section 1557, I mean, you see this as a direct threat to the providers of medicine, to those in your profession.
We do, absolutely. And in fact, our organization, the Christian Medical Dental Association, recognized this threat back in 2016. We joined with a Catholic healthcare alliance called the Franciscan Alliance, and with the help of Beckett Legal Fund, we filed suit against HHS, and we're very thankful that the District Court of Northern Texas has granted our current and future members a permanent injunction against action by HHS. So we have been concerned about this since its initial change back in 2016, and very thankful that we have this level of protection for our current and future members.
Okay, but there are many who don't fall under that protection.
There are many that don't, and there's just actually in the last few weeks, pharmacists are now under attack by HHS. They have released guidance on their obligation as pharmacists to dispense abortifacient drugs when a patient requests it. And it's interesting to note that they are specifically referring to Rule 1557 as the reason that they must dispense these drugs, because they will then be accused of sex discrimination. So it's clear that the Biden administration and HHS under Secretary Becerra is very serious about using this rule to enforce what they want, and that is not just gender identity treatments, but also, and now in the light of post-Dobbs, to force chemical and surgical abortions on healthcare professionals that normally would not be doing them.
Some of these puberty blockers, let's talk about some of the side effects. Now, I was doing some reading on this, and some talked about brain swelling, even vision loss. Is that accurate?
That can be very rare. What we're more concerned about is really two different things. And we know in medicine that the time of puberty is the critical time when calcium is deposited on the bones. In fact, those few years of puberty is when the vast majority of bone density is achieved. So what we're worried about is, okay, if we're delaying puberty for several years, and these puberty blocking agents are very effective, they will turn off puberty. And so when you give these drugs to these patients for years, what impact does that have on their long-term bone density? And preliminary studies have shown that it knocks it down, that they are at greater risk later in life of having either osteopenia or osteoporosis. So that's one major concern. The other that's been raised in the UK by this recent review is the actual maturing of the brain, because we know that the brain itself goes through a normal maturing process in terms of the synapses between the neurons and the hormones that are associated with puberty are very involved in that. So we don't know what happens when you shut those hormones off for a number of years. Are you impacting that person's ability to eventually develop the level of maturity that they were going to have before? We don't know the answer to that. So there's a lot of what, in essence, is experimentation going on with these kids with puberty blockers as well as cross-sex hormones.
So whatever happened to the do no harm part of the oath?
We somewhere lost it.
Yeah.
And that's because we've now decided to elevate ideology above scientific good medical evidence. And that's really what's happened in medicine the last 10 to 15 years.
Tulsi Gabbard, who's a Democrat representative, said this. Now, let's be clear. This administration is dangerously promoting child abuse and talking about this very issue. Would you agree that giving like potent drugs like this to children surgical means that it amounts to child abuse?
I'm hesitant to use the term abuse. Clearly, it's experimentation. Clearly, it's unsafe. I don't think it's medically indicated. I know that the Attorney General of Texas, Kenneth Paxton, has also called it child abuse. I do recognize that those who are doing it really believe they're doing something good for the child, but they're very, very wrongly directed. I think we're going to look back on this in much the same way as we did from the 50s when we were doing frontal lobotomies on people that had mental health disease and then realized while we were thinking we were doing good, later we realized we were doing great, horrible harm. And I think that's exactly what's going to happen in this particular case.
Now, earlier in our interview, you brought up, you mentioned the matter of suicide, and we are often told that we've got to do this. We have to give these sex hormone treatments and cross-sex hormones. We need to give the bodily, the surgically altering procedures in order to prevent suicides from taking place, that there's high level of suicides unless we do this. But yet you were saying that there is no change in that suicidal rate?
That's exactly correct. When you look at the best studies, and this is key because there are several studies out there that have been poorly done. They haven't followed the patients along very many years, or there's a very loss to follow-up rate. And when you get rid of these very borderline studies and look at the best studies out there, you recognize that there really is no proof that putting a child on the treadmill of gender transition using first puberty blockers and then cross-sex hormones helps that patient. And you know, the parents, you're right, they're put into a terrible situation. They're often told by these clinicians that, do you want a dead son or a live daughter? And that's a horrible place for a parent to be put in, and of course they're going to answer, well, of course I want a live daughter. But that is a false dichotomy. That is not the way it ought to be presented to these parents, because there is no good, solid proof that giving them this medication will help decrease the suicide rate. Because unfortunately, once they identify as having gender dysphoria, they automatically, from that point on, do have an elevated suicide rate above the normal population.
And yet I see horror stories come across my desk every now and then of parents who have had their children taken away from them by a court or social services because they will not get into, you know, this gender-affirming medication or surgeries, et cetera. It is truly troublesome how we're splitting families on this issue.
Yeah, and it gets back to the ideology. They don't believe that parents, when it comes to gender identity, know what's best for their children, and they believe that the government and these specialized clinics know what's better. But unfortunately, we at CMDA believe that they're very, very wrong.
Yeah. So what can people across this country do? I mean, this change has just come about. I understand it just posted today, this rule change of Section 1557. How can people get engaged in this? How can they let their views be heard?
Well, I would really enthusiastically just ask all of your listeners, every one of them are going to be impacted by this. many, if they're not in the healthcare profession, are going to be impacted indirectly, because I'm sure those that are listening want to go to a Christian healthcare professional or someone who practices according to their Christian values. Well, if this rule is successful in being passed, we're going to have many Christian healthcare professionals that are going to be forced out of the practice of medicine. We've actually done a survey on our membership asking, what would you do if you were forced to do something against your conscience? And 91% answered by saying that they were either likely or very likely to leave medicine altogether.
Wow.
And so even if you're not a healthcare professional, if you're a patient, I mean, everybody is eventually going to be a patient, and you want to go to a Christian healthcare professional, you need to protect their ability to practice medicine according to good Christian values. So I would just encourage them to, they can go and they can make comments for the next 60 days on this website. I would just encourage them to make known how important it is for them to have a healthcare professional that practices medicine according to Christian values. Tell HHS what it would mean if all of these doctors and nurse practitioners and PAs were forced out of medicine. So that's critical, and especially if you are a healthcare professional, whether it be physician or, again, nurse practitioner, you need to go and put down your comments. There's no limit, I don't believe, on any length. Let them know how you feel about this and how opposed you are to it, so that perhaps we can prevent them from getting this rule passed.
Okay, when you said go to the website, what website are you referring to?
I don't have a link at this point in time, but we will in the next few days at our website, and it would be cmda.org/thepoint. We'll be publishing a blog in the next few days that will lay out the procedure as well as laying out the website. If they really want to do it today, all they would need to do is just Google revision to Rule 1557 HHS, and that should bring up either a related website or the website itself where they can post their comments.
Okay, again, you could do a web search on revisions, Rule 1557, and there you should be able to find a way to file comments. Otherwise, within just a few days, cmda.org/thepoint. Now, Doctor, I understand also that you've got just a ton of resources at cmda.org to be a help to people across this nation.
Yeah, we have, they can look at our position statements if they're interested in where we stand officially as an organization. We have a position statement on gender identity, on homosexuality, on abortion, and on many other different issues that are freely downloadable on our website. And that would just be, they could go to cmda.org and look for position statements and go from there.
Friends, you're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Dr. Jeffrey Barrow is our guest, and we're going to open our phone lines here today. Our number is 800-733-9829. We're talking today about HHS redefining sex and targeting the medical profession. We'll be back in just 1 minute. Give us a call here at 800-733-9829. Your thoughts on the issue today, your questions for the doctor on this issue, our number 800-733-9829.
Marital conflict is increasing. The commitment to love and to cherish is being thrown away in many relationships. Marriage has been shunned by some and distorted from God's original design by others. The film Amazing Love is a feature-length film depicting a true commitment in marriage. It is the story of a youth director and his wife who take five teens from their youth group to the wilderness for a two-night campout. Two teen girls then have a sharp argument that causes division. Tensions are high. The youth leader gathers the teens and tells the account of Hosea. Using flashback, the film takes you to Nazareth as the story of Hosea unfolds. A story of commitment, of cherishing vows, of faithfulness and unconditional love. The DVD, Amazing Love, is available for a donation of $12 to VCY America. Call 1-800-729-9829.
friends, as our guest today has said, this is going to impact you one way or another. It's going to impact you. It's going to move doctors with morals and values, Christian doctors. It's going to remove them from the profession itself. This is, in my opinion, going to escalate insurance rates because it's going to force insurance programs that in which, you know, hospitals or doctors, whatever, that take Medicare money, going to force them to participate in this as well and to make your insurance plans pay for this. I mean, it's truly, truly troubling indeed, the level as to which this is going. And maybe you yourself have family members that are dealing with this, a son, a daughter, a grandson, granddaughter, niece, nephew, and kind of struggling with what do you do in this case? How can you provide for them the help that is needed? Our phone number here, 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. Dr. Burrows, I was very interested in going to HHS's website here today, and I found that they have a sheet on this, and it says HHS announces proposed rule to strengthen non-discrimination in healthcare, but it does just the opposite. It is really bringing discrimination in healthcare.
Yeah, it all revolves around how you define non-discrimination. That is the key. And again, I want to be clear that we at CMDA do not at all endorse any healthcare professional from refusing to provide routine medical care to somebody on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity. That's unbiblical. I think that's unchristian. But what the Biden administration is doing is saying that if you don't not only provide routine care but provide the care requested for these patients, which can include providing gender transition or providing an abortion or a prescription for chemical abortion to a patient that requests it, then you are guilty of discrimination. And this is an entirely new definition, and it's extremely dangerous, and it will, if it holds, will unfortunately drive a lot of healthcare professionals out of medicine.
Let's begin in Cookeville, Tennessee. We have Shelley calling. Hi, Shelley. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi. I just wanted to say that it seems like everything this administration is doing is anti-Christian, goes against our values, and I believe it's purposeful. And my daughter is a pharmacist, and she still is paying on her student loans. Mm-hmm. It sounds like they want to purge the medical field, like they've done the military and law enforcement and yeah. Everything else, but that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you for the call here. Doctor, that's an interesting point, purging the medical field, and we're seeing that happen, you know, as she said, in the military or different aspects, that purging going on to anybody who's not going to fall lock, step, and barrel, you know, with the administration.
You know, I don't think that's too far-fetched a concept. I think it's clear, not just within the Biden administration and within HHS. When you look at the major medical societies, for instance, the American College of OBGYN has, in their ideology, completely gone to the pro-abortion stance. And they really, I don't think they would mind if all of the members either quit that are pro-life, either quit practicing OBGYN or decide if they're in the student and resident phase not to go in it. They also, I think, would like to see their membership purified as only consisting of people that engage in abortion. And that's, I think that's tragic. It's unfortunate, and it's not fair to the patients who want, in fact, a diversity of healthcare professionals out there that they can choose from.
We've got some available phone lines, 800-733-9829. Let's go to Cynthia in Tiffin, Ohio. You're on the air.
Yes. First of all, thank you for the work you're doing. My question is, I live in Northwest Ohio, where there's a large contingency of Muslim doctors who have immigrated here, and in southern Michigan. Do you work with them since they're facing against homosexuality?
Hey, you're cutting out here, Cynthia.
Can you hear me now?
Okay. What is your specific question then,
My specific question is, in Northwest Ohio,
right,
we have a large contingency of Muslim doctors who have immigrated here as well as other Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Since their faith, and these are practicing Muslims, I've been a patient in these hospitals,
mm-hmm.
Since they practice their faith, are they working with the Christians to stop this since it's part of their faith not to against homosexuality?
Okay, we're going to have to try and interpret it because you're cutting out here again. Doctor, are you able to respond in any regard to the caller?
Yeah, I think I understand her question, and I would say that we're not currently working with them, but that doesn't mean we're not open to it. In fact, CMDA has joined together with other organizations to form a relatively new alliance. We're calling it the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine. And these Muslim medical groups, I think, would be welcome to join us. And it's really the essence of this alliance is to promote the practice of Hippocratic medicine, which, of course, was opposed to abortion, opposed to euthanasia. Even though they didn't address the issue of gender identity change, we would be opposed to that as well. And so the Muslims would also be a subject to this change. And so it would be, I think, very wise for them to get engaged at some level.
What you're saying, join forces to fight against this. I mean, this is going to impact broadly and hugely the medical professional and profession and pharmacist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Everybody within the healthcare profession, regardless of their religious faith or background, if they oppose gender identity change, if they oppose abortion, if they oppose assisted suicide, they want to join with us in this Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine so that we can protect the ability to practice what is traditional Hippocratic medicine in the United States because it's clearly under threat.
Jim is calling from Charleston, Illinois. Jim, you're on the air.
Yes, as the brother used to always call in, that's gone home to be with the Lord, we need to pray.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you that prayer is going to be an answer to what we're talking about today, and I just want to give you a little example. We are blessed with a very godly woman who is our United States House of Representatives representing from our area, Mary Miller. Mary was just a stay-at-home mom, raised her 7 kids, and then decided God was calling her to do something else. She ran and got elected to the United States House of Representatives. And she's been a whirlwind ever since then, and we just are really, but I never would have thought to pray and ask God to do that. The reason why I'm telling you all this is I was at an event recently where Mary was, and everything you're talking about is very heavy on her heart in the House of Representatives, because she showed me a map on her phone. She said, here's 10 years ago, here's the number of these health sex change clinics that were around the country, there's nothing. She said, now look at them. And she showed me a map on her phone of where they're located strategically all around the country. She said she was in a hearing with the head of Health and Human Services, where, again, the representative's got a chance to ask this person who's in this position. And basically she said to him, she said, are you telling me causing a young boy to not be able to have children or ever procreate is not child abuse? And his answer to her was, I'm not going to go down that rat hole with you.
Mm.
In other words, she was correct on what she was saying, and he didn't have any defense for it.
Yeah.
So that's what we're facing against in this administration and the things, and it's a political problem, but above and beyond, it's a spiritual problem.
It is.
That we're dealing with.
Thank you, Jim. And that's an important point here, Dr. Barrows, as well, and that is the aspect of prayer in all of this. And yes, we can go to that website and file comments, but we need to take this to the King of Kings and Lord of Lords as well.
That's a great point, and I don't mean to diminish that. And we are very, very engaged in prayer at CMDA, and that's a regular practice for all of our staff throughout the day and on many issues, and it is critical. And the caller is very correct. It has a component that's a spiritual warfare component, and the only way to engage that is through the power of prayer.
Amen. Let's go to Tim in Tomahawk, Wisconsin. Tim, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I was just wondering, is there any laws or reason why Christian medical professionals cannot get together and establish their own practice under biblical standards.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And in essence, you are that association, Doctor.
Yes, we are. We are an association of members. But I think what Tim is asking is if Christians could somehow form an organization to be able to practice medicine. The purpose of CMDA is not to directly practice medicine. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the only way that that would be allowed, especially if this rule revision goes in, would be that they incorporate in a way that they never take any federal dollars for anything. And there are a few practices around the country that are like that, and they're usually family physicians, primary care, and they just take cash from the patients.
Mm-hmm.
And that would protect them against this, because the enforcement of Rule 1557 is tied into the receiving of federal funds like Medicare and Medicaid. So if there's a group of doctors that are primary care and they say, I don't want to have to do this, I want to be able to practice medicine, again, the only way is that they would not take in any federal funds whatsoever, and they would be able to do it.
Cash only.
Yep.
Thank you, Tim.
All right.
Let's go to Diane next. Glendale, Arizona, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Diane Rhodes. Thank you for what you're talking about today and all the things you both do. I am a retired nurse, and I want to say in 1984, it became very apparent what was happening with children and with adults and others. I worked in ER and ICU, and we had to take ACLS, Advanced Cardiac Life Support, every 2 years. In 1984, they came out with this idea that people over 65 did not need to be resuscitated. They didn't want to care for them over 65. So they started telling us that, and the doctors were in charge of deciding who would get resuscitation or not, or what to do with these children. And so what happened was they got sued, the American Heart Association and state associations of healthcare. Anyway, the long and short of it was, in 2 years, they had to stop it. Then they quit it. And then they, 2 years later, they started this same thought with this ACLS. So what I'm saying is a lot of Christian nurses and doctors prayed hard, and we stepped up for advocating for the patient. But I'm telling you, some doctors who stood up for this right of life for people over 65,
mm-hmm.
they were persecuted and not given health care. A couple of them died because they got bad care. It's a long story, but we've been praying hard, and we still have the fight going on to keep people over 65 getting their health care, getting their resuscitation, and so forth.
Thank you.
Well, I don't know if you remember, but President Trump, he said before he left office something about, if you're over 65, don't go to the ER. Call the 911 number if you're in trouble. But he said, we're going to send somebody else to take you to another place.
Yeah, because I'm up against a break, and we're kind of going off another direction than our main topic here today. But thank you so much for our call here, Diane. We'll be back in 1 minute. And folks, if you missed the point of contact here for filing comments, we'll give you that here after the break as well. Back in a minute on Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brennan House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. Well, since the early 90s, I and many others like Tom DeWeese have been warning about Agenda 21, also known now as Agenda 2030. Well, here's a new phrase you need to learn, 30 by 30. The Biden regime, in connection with the Department of Agriculture, the Interior Department, and global entities, are working here in America and around the world to take the farmland from farmers. Right now in the Netherlands, we're seeing big riots by, and rightfully so, the farmers. The government's trying to tell them they have to cut their herds by 50% to protect some kind of clover. Here in America, the 30 by 30 land grab is just that. The federal government wants to take 30% of our land and waterways by 2030. 30% of our land gone, can't be used. The end of private property by 2030. Wake up, Americans.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Our telephone number, 800-733-9829. Our topic today is HHS as Health and Human Services, a redefining sex under the Section 1557 in the Affordable Care Act, the ACA, the Obamacare, and targeting medical professionals and trying to force medical professionals to violate their own conscience by performing body-altering surgeries or prescribing medications that would, in essence, do harm to their patients. We're talking today with Dr. Jeffrey Barros, the Senior Vice President of Bioethics and Public Policy for Christian Medical and Dental Association. Doctor, the caller here just before the break brought up many things, some of which pertain, some of which don't, to our topic today. But I'd like to talk about one aspect. She talked about the persecution of doctors who, you know, fought against that measure that she was talking about, age 65 or older resuscitation. But the same is true here as far as those who don't want to conform to performing these body-altering surgeries or giving medications that they know are going to be harmful, to the patient. That there is this there are penalties for doctors who won't participate.
Yeah, Jim, and it isn't just whether or not they want to give the medications. We have a member. I'm not going to mention the name or anything, but we have a member that lost a position. In fact, I can think of two that lost teaching positions simply on the basis of their refusal or questioning the use of preferred personal pronouns.
Wow.
This is a whole nother arena within the healthcare profession, but it never even got to the point where they were asked to prescribe either puberty blockers or cross-sex hormones just to begin using and mandating the use of preferred personal pronouns in the healthcare setting. And there are many very good reasons for us not to do that because it becomes very confusing. Medicine is very different for a biologic male than it is for a biologic female, mm-hmm. in lots of different ways, heart disease and all kinds of ways. So it's important for us as healthcare professionals to really remember and not forget that we're dealing with somebody of a particular biologic sex. But in spite of that, because of just a refusal or a hesitation to use preferred personal pronouns, we've had members that have lost their teaching positions.
Wow. Let's go to Elizabeth next, calling from Tennessee. Hi, Elizabeth. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes, let us pray God will intervene and protect these little children in schools. And I believe it would be great to get prayer back in schools that mm-hmm. don't have prayer in school. Mm-hmm. Thank you, and God bless.
Thank you. Yeah, again, the importance of prayer for God to intervene, and certainly we live in troublesome times, and it takes people who are serving in Congress to stand up often as well, Doctor, against these rule changes, or those that will file lawsuits against these rule changes. I mean, there are many different components to all of this, certainly prayer being a very important component that hits every one of these issues, but it's important who we have representing us in the House and the Senate and who is appointing these people in positions like in Health and Human Services. It really makes a difference.
Yeah, I love the story of the caller earlier, and I think it was Representative Miller who was just going through her normal life and then felt the Lord call her into politics. And I think that's the time when we, you want to listen, and we do need people. But I think it's key that they be Christians that are feeling a definite call from the Lord and to be willing to answer that. It's not a field I would want to go into myself, but they're definitely.
Yes, indeed. Well, friends, again, we're talking about this rule change for Section 1557 to the Affordable Care Act, and this is something that you can do a quick web search, revisions to Rule 1557, and that will get you to the point of being able to make your comments known. And in just a couple of days as well, CMDA.org. That stands for Christian Medical Dental Association, CMDA.org. And you said that slash the point?
Yes.
And
the point is one of our blogs, and we will be having a blog that will specifically talk about Rule 1557 changes and how our members or anyone else can go and explain the in detail the process for submitting comments.
Okay, so again, that's cmda.org/thepoint. Now, how long is this comment period open for?
It's open for 60 days from today, and so that means it's going to end on October the 3rd. And I would encourage your members to do something closer to the day, because if you let it go too long, if you're like me, you'll forget about it, and then that deadline will pass. So mm-hmm. I think while it's still fresh in their minds and they're recognizing the importance, they want to do it relatively soon rather than waiting.
So doctors are being targeted by this in a very, very unprofessional manner, but also in a very targeted manner for those who have religious convictions. And when you look at your patient and wanting to serve your patient, some of these, whether it be the surgeries or even some of these medications prescribed, some of these things are not reversible, are they?
No, not at all. And what you don't hear about very often, Jim, is the fact that any child taking cross-sex hormones for, I would say, at least if they're doing it for a year, is likely to be rendered permanently infertile. And that's what a lot of these patients, unfortunately, are recognizing in their 20s and 30s. When they get older, the other parts of their brain mature, and then they recognize, oh, my goodness, I made a mistake. Mm-hmm. I really am not a woman in a man's body. I am, in fact, a man. But they want to go back and resume a normal life, and then they recognize that, no, they have been rendered permanently infertile among the other side effects or potential side effects that are with these drugs. So it's really tragic, and we're seeing a lot of these detransitioners coming out. And actually, a lot of what happens in the UK right now is because of a lawsuit filed by one of these detransitioners, saying that they really weren't properly counseled when they went through the puberty blockers and the cross-sex hormones. They didn't understand how dangerous they were.
Well, friends, there's so many tragic stories ahead of us just waiting as these stories unfold of young people who've been put on these cross-sex hormones and certainly to stop the puberty from taking place, very troublesome indeed, and then many following through on surgical means as well. Folks, again, this is revision to Rule 1557. The website cmda.org/thepoint. And Dr. Barrows, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
And friends, you're informed on this issue. Thanks for listening and joining us here today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.